This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Glenn Stewart has been tending to the garden outside of the Westport Post Office for 8 years. Recent personnel changes at the post office have changed that. Glenn joins us to explain. Also, Jessica Skyfield updates us on wastewater well permit applications in eastern Kansas. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. Biologicaldiversity.org reports the Oakland City Council today approved a resolution opposing new fossil fuel drilling off the California coast and fracking in existing offshore oil and gas wells. The vote follows President Trump's April 28th executive order urging federal agencies to expand oil and gas leasing in federal waters. Trump's order could expose the Pacific Ocean to new oil leasing for the first time in more than 30 years. The last offshore lease in federal waters off California was in 1984, but Trump's orders seek to renew the leasing program. There are more than 30 offshore drilling platforms and hundreds of miles of underwater oil and gas pipelines off California's coast. Operators want permits to frack offshore wells using chemicals that are toxic to wildlife. Grist.org reports the first floating wind turbines just came online. Five giant turbines bobbing in the North Sea, 15 miles off of the Scottish coast, are now producing electricity, at peak enough for 20,000 homes. InsideClimateNews.org reports Republicans in Congress have spent decades trying and failing to bring oil and gas development to one of the United States' last truly untouched areas. Now they appear to have the votes to make it happen. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge represents the final frontier of American wilderness. Its 19.3 million acres in Alaska are home to polar bears, caribou, and thousands of bird species, and it is sacred to the Gwich'in people. Along its northern edge is a controversial swath of land called the Coastal Plain, and this is where the GOP has long fought to bring drilling. Drilling in the refuge is not yet a done deal. The Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee will have to come up with a recommendation to meet the budget instruction. This is not the first attempt to open the ANWR for drilling. Congressional Republicans came close in 1995 when a provision recommending opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge made it through Congress before being vetoed by President Bill Clinton. 10 years later, a similar effort gained support in the Senate but ultimately failed. Grist.org reports the first negative emissions carbon capture plant is up and running. On Wednesday, Iceland flipped the switch on the first project that will remove more CO2 than it produces. The plant is operated by Climeworks, which also opened the first commercial carbon capture plant in Switzerland earlier this year. And finally, e360.yale.edu reports pollution around the globe, from contaminated air to tainted water, contributes to an estimated 9 million deaths annually, according to a new study published in the medical journal The Lancet. The pollution is linked to heart conditions, strokes, and lung cancer, among other health issues, it said. This would mean that pollution is responsible for 1 in 6 deaths worldwide every year, 3 times more deaths than HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined, the Washington Post reported. More than 90% of the fatalities occurred in poor or middle-income countries. Rapidly industrialization nations, including India, China, and Pakistan, accounted for a quarter of these deaths. That's all for the news. At this time, I'd like to turn the show over to Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you, Naturally. Good evening, everyone. Just as she said, this is Richard Mabian. For those of you who don't know me, as usual, I'm glad to be here to host this show. There's so much going on this planet that being involved with this show just, it's a thrill to be able to have a voice in what we're looking at and what we're dealing with. I think that last topic that Naturally was talking about, as far as the amount of nine million deaths a year from pollution, that's just staggering, you know. Boy, that's something else. But, I mean, it's real. I saw the article, I think it was on TV, and they had a kind of like, look like old days of L.A. with the smog. I mean, you couldn't even hardly see, you know. But You know, the thing that gets you when you're on the inside, like we are working our way out, you realize how does anybody really care? You know, that's what you find yourself asking those questions. We have a very, I think, a human interest person here with us tonight, human interest show to begin with. Maybe both of the people we're going to have on. As Naturally said, we have Glenn Stewart. And Glenn, would you say hello to everyone for me, please?
Sure. Hello, everyone.
That's very good. And her story, I think, is very unique and interesting because here's a person who, on their own, are out trying to do something good for this planet and do something good for people, and yet she's being attacked and treated in such a way that's very ill-mannered. So what I do, let's start from the right from the beginning. What got you into doing what it is you do, and you can explain to people what that is.
Sure. About 8.5 years ago, I had a P.O. box at the Westport Post Office, and I noticed when I went there were three very bedraggled rose bushes and a big muddy area right out front. This would be facing Westport Presbyterian Church and abutting Mario's. So one day in April, I asked the then manager if he would have a problem with me feeding the roses, pruning them, giving them bone meal, watering them. That he said, absolutely, that's fine. So I did it for a couple of weeks, and I realized that spring was upon us, and I thought, well, I could actually make a little bed here and just get something started. And again, I asked permission, and he said, sure. Now, part of this is because I live in an apartment and didn't have a place to garden, and I think it's in my fiber and DNA. I grew up in the South and always, you know, liked the flora and the fauna and was always very good at gardening. I definitely have a green thumb. So it grew from there, and I had things like some firemen helped me put a piece. Actually, it was from a brick column that was hit by a driver and it broke. It was over by the BP station in Midtown. And we hauled that away, and I made some sections, and then we took a railroad tie and I painted it and just created an area. So that's how it started. Fast forward, and I think about 4 years ago I began to tend to the long side, which faces the Westport Library. But within that time, and people would bring plants. I dug up plants from friends' yards, and they would bring things. And, for example, Benson Law Firm gave me this Russian sage, which is probably 4 feet wide now, that big purple one, yeah. And that used to go to California's for their drinks on the weekend. And just, you know, lovely little pieces of art, which I would, of course, install safely. And it was sort of a multifaceted thing because it was sort of filling in between the street and the sidewalk, or street and concrete, we would say. But it also helped Mario's because there weren't people sitting on the wall hanging around scaring the customers away. There were all kinds of layers. It made people happy, and when I began to put herbs in and grow lemon balm, you know, that whole activity and participation expanded. So it's been on the Urban Farms and Garden Tour twice, and I didn't know this till after the first time, but I met a student who was studying government at UMKC, and she was writing a paper about the garden, which, by the way, I named the Magic Garden. I even have a little logo for it. And I'll explain why in a minute. But anyway, she called it an edible landscape. And evidently that is a trend in a lot of right. urban areas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now look, so you, on your own, mm-hmm. saw this space uh-huh. and decided, because of your DNA, I'm going to go over there and do something. And so you started growing stuff, mm-hmm. okay? And then you expanded it and got people involved with you. So you got a little community thing going on out there on your own.
Right? Yes.
God, that's unbelievable. That's what we are. I'm working my tail off over in Wyandotte County teaching the future generations to have a love for being able to do that. The community garden folks in town, one of their overall objectives is to see everybody with a raised bed garden in their backyard, you know. So now, so what you're doing is what many folks that are engaged in the education aspect of it have as an objective. So, okay, so here you got the, who was benefiting from what you were growing?
Well, of course, I personally was because I loved it, but I think also the young kids at Willow Woods would come by. People that shop or work or live in the area. Recently, particularly in the last 3 years, the butterfly bush just got huge, and I had lots of milkweed, and I had really a butterfly sanctuary. And it was just joyous to see very stressed people walking by with their cell phones, and all of a sudden they'd take a minute and look, or they would come out of the post office after being frustrated from standing in line. And to watch these grown-ups take a breath and take a picture. A couple of weeks ago, we counted 20 butterflies.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All different sizes and varieties. So, I mean, it was also helping the environment because, right. you know, the monarchs were very much at risk.
Right.
And so, you know, there are layers. It fed me. I could do things like put gravel or pieces of stone or pretty colors in places where nothing grew anyway.
Right.
So it was a chance to just create something kind of peaceful.
Okay, so here you are. You're yeah. enjoying it. You're doing something that's very pleasant and peaceful. I'm getting ready to give out the phone number just in case when she goes to this, we flip the switch here and go to the second thing about that we want her to tell us about. It, just in case you might want to call in, the number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Okay, so here you got this beautiful little project going on, this brewing love. What happened?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I pulled up before on my way to work, which I always go by in the morning and in the evening, regardless of what time of year it is. And I have doves to feed, and I kind of check and make sure everything's safe. And I noticed a couple of people standing outside and pointing to something and just looking at the body language, something didn't look right. So I got out of the car and said, is there a problem here? Can I help you? And it turned out to be a new middle to upper management postal employee, not from the Westport Post Office. And she was extremely rude and started yelling at me and felt everything was overgrown. And I kind of handled it calmly. And we came to an agreement that I told her I had some people coming and friends coming in. I was removing some sod and, you know, because arena grasses can be unmanageable sometimes.
Caller, I know you're on the air, so don't hang up. I wanted to get this out, then I'm going to ask your question.
Sure, and I'm going to kind of condense it. Anyway, we finally came to an agreement that I would take care of certain things by the 9th, and she would come back and reinspect it. So I went back that afternoon to cut a couple of things back, and she was still there, and she ordered me off the property. Took a picture of my license plate and said she was going to call the police.
Let's get this caller.
Yes.
Okay, caller, the first caller, you're on the air right now. Will you give us your name and the part of the city you're calling from, please?
Hi, my name's Steve. I live in Independence, but I'm always over in Westport. I work there and hang out there. And I know her. I apologize. I forgot her name, but I was walking by one day and she showed me everything she grew. It was really beautiful. And she also showed me some mint leaves. So I'd get some of those mint leaves and go over to Broad Lake Cafe and order a tea. They got good tea and honey, and I'd put those mint leaves in it. The only downfall is I wish it was bigger because she knows how to grow. I mean, she had everything in there. She had basil growing and all kinds of different herbs, and but she's a she's it's really nice what she's doing.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Steve. I'm going to get this second call, and then we're going to have her come back on and answer you, so you got Steve's to deal with. And okay, the other caller, you on the line. Give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please.
Hello, I'm Joseph Davis. I am the one who helped Glenn go public with this. I just wanted to call and give my support to my fellow, or to my sister, Scorpio, who's worked so hard to make that part of Westport beautiful. I help make Westport beautiful as well. I am part of the Broadway District, and I just wanted to let my partner in coffee crime know that we did the best we could, and you know, we'll move forward and go from there. I just wanted to let Glenn know I was listening, and I'll probably see her when I get back to work. Today is my Friday, and so I wanted to give my support to her and let her know that, you know, at least on my Facebook page, a lot of people were very sad when I posted the pictures of before and after. And I don't think that post office has made many friends.
All right. Thank you, sir, for calling in.
Yeah.
I'm giving the number again. It's 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. I think we're going to take a break here.
No,
go ahead.
Why don't we finish this segment?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, thank you, Steve and Joseph, for calling. And Joseph is a new blue shirt. We now have a CID in our area. Okay. We love it. Just to condense this, there was a brief slowing down of everything. There was an interview with Channel 41. Unbeknownst to me, somewhere in there, Congressman Cleaver sent an email and a fax, and I believe that's why they halted things for a little bit. When I met with the new postmaster and a consumer affairs person, it was clear that they had no intention of saving the garden, as they said they were.
So, if I, let me get this straight.
Sure.
So the lady, the new person, the new management person came in, thought that the garden was not attractive and told you that you could no longer be on the ground. They mm-hmm. wanted the garden out, right?
Yes, but then when the other people came in, they apologized for her behavior and said she had overstepped her position, that they were going to work with me, but they didn't work with me. They were more polite. But
so this beautiful task that you were going about doing,
yeah,
on your own, probably out of your own pocket.
Well, and the Heart of Westport also helped, and Ace Hardware donated things, and churches, and
so you got people that are liking what you're doing and then turning this into something community,
mm-hmm.
something that was, especially Westport, that's something that was really nice. So now you got a place that wants you out. So what's the status right now?
The status is, after I met with the new postmaster and the consumer affairs representative, that would have been last Thursday, I was told that the postmaster said he would be out of town until today, and that I could uninstall art, although he liked some of it, and I could uninstall the art or dig up anything because when they came back, they were going to start their own plan. So I've been very busy giving away and digging and having people come by. And if you drive by, particularly on the Wyandotte side, you'll see exactly what I mean.
I mean, this is kind of sad, you know, in a way.
Yes,
it's really sad. I mean, you had to dig up your art. They just kind of told you. And they're going to start something new. Like
what? Put in more space for a parking lot?
Yeah, what are they going to do?
Well, they're, and again, they have, for example, and it isn't that I don't respect the rules, but things can only be knee-high. You know, there are certain things they have to pay attention to.
Okay.
There would be a way to adjust all this, but that wasn't the point. Their plans are to reduce everything, mow it down, replace it with black canvas and mulch because that way the weeds won't grow, but they will, and put some shrubs in. So, you know, it's just a different concept. And the thing that disturbs me the most is not having the ability to, you know, work with it in any way.
Yeah. No, I feel you. For those of you out there who know me, you know, community gardens is my way of life. I have been teaching and encouraging people to put them in all over the city. We have the one that's over there at the Hilton Garden Inn on 5th and Minnesota. This very beautiful garden, and people just love going by and seeing it. So to sit here and hear a fellow comrade that is being treated in that manner is just, it's just unforgivable.
If I can, I would like to clarify one thing, because you know, when they reached out and really wanted the publicity and the phone calls to stop, their concept of working with me was giving me 5 slots to put herbs in, but I can't water, I can't go on the property, I can't tend to them, and that's the extent of the garden. So
you can't go on the property. Is this a public, is this a private?
No, it's considered federal property.
Federal property. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it is.
This is just really a trip. I told y'all it was just going to be a sad story. I'm going to get the number out there again for you, 816-931-5534. If anyone wants to call in and share something about this or just how it's making you feel, please do, 816-931-5534. So what are your plans?
Well, I will say that for the first time in 2 weeks, I actually slept the whole night. Oh. I think before that, I was averaging 3 or 4 hours a night. So my plans now are that I did save the butterfly bush. I did dig the root and stump up. I hope to find a place for it. I'm just going to let everything go and see what happens in the spring.
So you really right now don't have a place to continue this?
No.
I wish you was close to Kansas City, Kansas, boy. I got spaces all over the place, boy. You're a perfect person for doing what you're doing. That would be so nice.
Well, I'm working on a short film, and I do work. And so, I mean, there's the rest of my life. I'll have more time for that. But this is a big gap because, you know, imagine going by every morning and every evening for 8.5 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know.
You got some time involved here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tragedy. Well, I'm glad you had a chance to come in and tell us your story.
Thank you.
We'll continue to follow up on you and report back to folks what's going on. And you got our love and you have our blessings. Okay?
I feel it. Thank you so much.
All righty.
Okay, we'll be back after these messages.
Healthy trees, healthy streams. On this Current Cast. A review of more than 200 studies about streams led Byrne Sweeney of the Stroud Water Research Center in Pennsylvania to this conclusion.
If we had 100 feet of forest on either side of any given stream, we would be able to put that stream in a much better condition to support wildlife, to be swimmable, to be fishable, but also to provide the ecosystem services that we desperately need.
Sweeney says trees help capture runoff and provide shade and food for aquatic animals, improving the health of the stream. As a result, the stream is better able to process fertilizers, toxins, and other pollutants, providing a cleaner, healthier water supply. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Hi, this is Bill Sundahl, Development Director here at KKFI. I just want to pass on to all of our listeners who donated in the Fall Fund Drive a heartfelt thank you from all of our champions, hosts, DJs, board and committee members, staff, and every other volunteer who put forth their time, talent, and treasure to make this pledge drive a success. We also want to thank Californos and Westport for their years of support to KKFI and the many other organizations they support in our community. Thanks, Californos, for sustaining our community.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
All right, we're back in the studio. You're listening to Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And our next guest is on the phone, Jessica Schofield. Are you there, Jessica?
I am. I'm here.
Great. So, to remind our listeners, you were on a couple weeks ago. Jessica is with Kansas Water, and at the time we were talking about what was going on in the Flint Hills with regards to a permit for a wastewater well, for injecting fracking wastewater. And so it seems like a movement is growing across Kansas with regards to this. And and just in time, and you might say, because it seems like now there's applications springing up all over the place, or application permit applications for these wells. I think I've seen in Franklin County, Douglas County, Jefferson County, and even Johnson County, which is really close, of course, to Kansas City. So what say you? By the way, Jessica, just to let you know, Natural E and Richard Mabey and Glenn, our first guest, Glenn Stewart, is also here, so they may jump in as well. But,
sure.
But so what say you about these permeation of these wells getting closer to Kansas City?
Well, you know, they stand to make money the more they have, so they're just going to march eastward. So our well, you know, our reserves out here aren't as profitable as the ones out west, but with new technologies they've developed, such as these recovery wells, advanced recovery wells, which some of these will be, which usually involve a lot more water, chemicals, and advanced recovery. That's what they're called.
What does that mean, advanced recovery wells?
So it's like basically it's rock formations that would have been passed up when we had, I guess, more petroleum reserves under our ground, and now that we don't, they're trying new technologies and new methodologies to get oil out of rocks that it's harder and less, typically less profitable to do, but they're trying to find that balance, you know, so they still can continue to extract. But, I mean, that's kind of a side note, honestly. But they're moving eastward, yeah, and I mean, Lane County, I don't know if you mentioned that one, and there's two in Bourbon County, too. So,
I have a question for you. Jessica, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as an environmental person, I'm aware of the fact that these kind of circumstances go on, and it seems like the corporations really don't care what we think, or they don't really care about people complaining. My question to you is, what are people, just regular people, how are they feeling about what's going on?
I mean, I think that's part of the reason that, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why so many people are interested in this right now, because people are actually concerned about their infrastructure. So you're kind of getting, you know, different people that may not care about the environment or sovereignty of Native peoples, or, you know, more kind of, I guess, leftish thoughts. Republicans are interested, too, the other side, because of all the infrastructure. So there's a lot of people getting involved and definitely coming at it from a perspective of, there's also people coming at it from a perspective of, we're not having our voices heard.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and that's everyone, that's all of us, because we're actually very disenfranchised by the current regulatory way that this process works. And just, I didn't even come at it from that perspective. I came at it from a scientific perspective, and then I looked at all these regulations, and I'm like, this is insanity. Like, literally, it's insane. I mean, I know it sounds harsh, but...
No, everything you said is true. I'm on the board of directors for the Kansas Sierra Club, and so, you know, they've been very conscious about this from the word go. And it's always been a situation that we're talking about it, but we just don't see anything that's really being done about it. And even now, you know, that's why I asked the question, since you're out there in the field, how are other people reacting? Because now they're moving closer this way. I mean, we have earthquakes all over Kansas and Oklahoma. I mean, you know, and it just seems like, so what, you know?
Well, I mean, I think I'm not even out in the field. I can't say that at all. I live here in Kansas City, I mean, the suburbs or whatever, but, like, there are people that are actually out in the field, the farmers and ranchers out there. I mean, I don't know a lot of them, but the ones I've met, you know, it's actually their water those companies are taking. Like, their water rights are pretty much really being violated. Ours aren't, just because we have a different kind of infrastructure set up here, but I mean, so they're having to deal with their water being taken, their city selling their water without their permission, having to deal with their creeks actually being, you know, dumping grounds or where they're getting the water. It's their wells, their actual wells they're using being, like, right next to the, you know, there's, like, what, 15, 10-foot radius that they're allowed to be without with somebody's drinking water. I mean, so I'm not out in the field. Those people are out in the field, and they're seeing a lot of stuff that we're not. And I think a lot of it is just everybody being able to be connected, like on Facebook or whatever, to be able to actually hear what's going on out there. I mean, there are people in Wichita that are suffering pretty hardcore infrastructure damage. These earthquakes. I'm sorry, my dog.
Yeah,
can I ask a quick question?
I don't know who you are.
Pardon?
Let her know.
Oh, this is Glenn. I apologize.
Oh, no, no worries.
My quick question is, how are they able to violate their water rights? There's nothing written down. There's no ownership. There's no agreement.
Well, I still need to look into this.
Okay.
So the chief engineer of Kansas, who is an appointed, that's an appointed position, I can't remember his name. I'm going to contact him. He's the one that's responsible for saying, like, he's supposedly the people's water rights voice, but, you know, we don't know this guy anyway. But I think he sets kind of the precedent and the rules. So if I understand it, I mean, this is all, you know, new information to me. And the more I dig, the more. Like, I thought, for instance, KDHE, Mike asked me about, like, what's their dog in the fight, Kansas Department of Health and Environment. And they don't really even look at this post hoc. Like, they don't look at the public health perspective after the fact. That's what I thought they did. They actually just regulate different types of Class 2 wells. So they don't regulate the ones of oil and gas industries. They regulate, water well Class 2 wells. So they're different. But the reason the KDEHE can't be involved in this post hoc, like looking at the any public health data from these well things, is that the public health workers must sign a non-disclosure agreement for treating anyone that's affected by well water waste. Like, by that's crazy. They can't tell anybody. So,
so who where does that come from? That come from the state? The non-disclosure?
Yeah, that's this Kansas Corporation Commission. That's part of their regulations.
Well, that's a, tell me something, Jessica. How did you get involved?
I saw that article that Celia, the lady on with KCUR, wrote.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Flint Hills has been battling this since January people have been battling this for a while, but I've actually heard about, I guess, it in a way that made me look into it more on just September, and then I've just been digging, and the more you dig, it's like the more craziness you find.
Well, I'm inspired. I mean, both you and Glenn, you're just regular folks, you know what I mean, that's taking an interest in this planet. And so I guess we're making some headway in the work that we've been out here doing. We never, like you said, I am in the field. So you don't always get a chance to hear from others because you're always busy doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that we have people that are starting to take an interest in what's going on. And I agree with you about the water. Kansas has a water problem. I mean, you know, 50 years, the water's supposed to be dried up in the aquifers. And, you know, some of the farmers are out there, they're regulating how much water they can use, what days they can use it. A lot of that stuff is already going on, but it's not really known to the residents of Kansas. So it's good to see that someone like yourself is speaking up.
Jessica, do we know where, like, do we know, look, so in terms of, I'm thinking of the closest things to our audience are Douglas and Johnson County. So these are permit applications for wastewater wells, right? And what I've learned before is they generally try to put these wells by where the fracking occurs so they don't have to truck it so far. So I got a couple questions. Do you know where these wastewater wells are scheduled for in any of the counties we mentioned? And is the fracking going on there? Why they need that? Or are there plans for fracking?
Well, so not all of the wastewater is from just hydraulic fracturing. I mean, there is some wastewater produced from just regular oil wells, like straight line wells. And so I think a lot of this waste is actually them not wanting to truck that waste out. I mean, it's still toxic chemical stuff, but it's that's one of the reasons these ones that are nearer to us are pretty low PSI and low barrels. So that I think that's actually one of the tactics that these oil companies are using to be able to continue the operations, because they are noticing that, you know, the higher volumes and the more barrels, the more dangerous it is. And then that actually is on the books with KCC. So then they're just kind of being able to release less each day, but it's still cumulatively, you know, a problem, number one. But then number two, there's not a lot of oversight. And when there is, like when residents have complained, I mean, these companies end up getting fined a lot because they just routinely break the rules because nobody's catching them.
Yes.
Anyway, that's kind of a side note. But the one, I mean, so Cindy Hodel of Flint Hill Stewards has done a fantastic job compiling all, like, templates for the all of them come marching east towards us. And so, like, this one here, she's written, it's in the Bartlesville Formation in the Gillespie Lease. And then I haven't researched all of these because there's so many, but, and then she lists all the earthquakes. So you can look on Flint Hill's Facebook page and find letters if you want to write letters. There's a woman hosting a letter-writing campaign at the Lawrence Public Library tomorrow, also on behalf of all of us, which is Kansas, you know, Kansas Water, which is really all of us. And so she would love folks to come out to do that. And then, because one of the goals that we're having is putting speed bumps in the way of getting these things permitted. Okay, that's kind of side note too. Sorry, I have so much to say.
Yes.
But you were saying they are putting the wastewater that they're going to be putting closer to home here probably is, well, first of all, they're probably putting advanced recovery wells. I don't know a lot about what
right.
they're doing because they're really secretive about it, and they just ask for one thing at a time, and they'll have already built their wells, and so then there's a lot of actually, like, push from the oil companies onto the KCC to go ahead and permit the wells because they're already built. So that's a big deal.
So tell me, are the people who are doing the fracking, are they making money?
So I was looking into the statistics on, like, what kind of, you know, how much is the oil and gas industry as far as, like, you know, the economy of Kansas,
right.
and what's been the history of that. And I mean, I never have seen it over 10% of the Kansas economy. So, like, all that money if it is a lot of money, it's not generating a lot of money. It must just be going straight into folks' pocket because it's not actually, like, a large, substantial part of contributing to the economy like farming and ranching are.
Right.
I mean, those are still the cornerstones of Kansas's economy. Don't get me wrong.
I was just wondering if it's kind of like a hobby. You know, you're bored and you haven't got nothing else to do, because it's at that stage where it's new, and people experiment with stuff when it's new, and they're really not taking in consideration the damage that it's really causing. I'm just saying, because I just don't see it. You know, this is not, what was the old guy down there doing the natural gas, Clem Pickens or whatever his name was? You know, he was in it to make money.
T-Bone
Pickens. Yeah. Yeah, he was in it to make money. And I just don't see that kind of caliber of person here in Kansas. But I know they're doing it everywhere, you know. You hear about it going there.
I mean, they're there. I just don't think it's not the same, like, oil man identity that, you know, we have from that era. I think it's just different. It's the oil barons look different, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Jessica, I'm looking on the Flint Hill Stewards Facebook page, and they have a posting for Douglas County Thrasher sampled protest letter for toxic injection well in Douglas County, 2 of 2,
mm-hmm.
deadline
mm-hmm.
October 18th. So
that's not true, though. That data is incorrect.
Oh,
first of all, there's multiple reasons. That was just incorrect originally. I think it's actually tomorrow which is why Rosemarie is having that event at the Lawrence Public Library. Like, it will be a good, it'll be like the last-ditch effort, and then she would just mail them off. Because I think we're still unclear whether it's postmarked or arriving at the KCC, right. But it sounds like it's postmarked anyway. But it's wrong anyway because the company that requested that oil well only gave the public, in the public notice, they said you must let the KCC know in 15 days, and that's against the regulations. There's actually, it's 30. And so we have until basically like mid-November-ish to be able to protest both of those Douglas County wells because they messed up. There's another idea of not much regulatory oversight. They're just like, yeah, whatever, just 15, 30, yeah, done.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
Do you know those wells are for? Do you like geographically where they're located?
I have not done the research yet. Okay. No.
What about the one in Johnson County? Any idea?
I mean, I all I have to do is go to this website and plug in this section and the township and all that. I just haven't done it yet.
Okay. All right.
It's the Kansas Geological Survey website. I can do that. But what I wanted to talk about was that the City Council of Lawrence actually sent a letter to the KCC requesting that if they really wanted meaningful letters of protest from the people, they should get city council people and other Kansas legislatures about these issues. We actually need something more like 60 days to gather data, to gather information, to do assessments of risk and for infrastructure. I mean, you know, that's something cities need to care about, is this any potential seismicity. Like, they want to be able to do their independent background checks on these things instead of just rubber stamping these things through, which is great. I mean, the fact that they got on board and asked for that is really impressive, and it's a great example of a city standing up for its citizens. And hopefully other, you know, legislators in Kansas can see that and then, you know, take it to their branch of government and do similar things.
What city was that that did that?
Lawrence.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, they got some stalwart people up there in Lawrence that are very conscientious about what's going on with this environment. So I can see them making that move. Tell us a little bit more about the letter writing going on tomorrow so people who are listening will be aware of it. If they can't go, they can tell people about it. If you would, I appreciate that.
Sure. So at the Lawrence Public Library tomorrow, a friend of mine, Rosie, is hosting a letter-writing campaign. So she'll have information and envelopes and stamps and everything for people to be able to write letters. And you don't have to be a resident of the county to protest it. Anyone that, you know, is concerned for whatever reason, water, your water use, their water use, everyone, you know, we all have a vested interest in this. And so they luckily haven't, like, said, oh, only these people can do it. So anyone can write a letter for any well. It does help to have data, which we're going to get to Rosie by tomorrow. And, the more people we have on these dockets and the more people, I mean, you don't have to do anything. After you write the letter, Rosie will keep track of everybody and next steps, because what our goal is to just basically put speed bumps and then be able to, like, all get on the call. So all, you know, whoever basically doesn't want this to happen, they're going to have what? It'd be awesome if it were, like, 50 people they had to just, you know, go through to do the request for hearing, because, I mean, we're the people, and we're not even allowed. Like, this week we were supposed to go to they're actually ruling on the Morris County – requested a rehearing, and they're ruling on that tomorrow, but I'm not allowed to speak, and no one else is allowed to speak, and the public can be there, but they'll probably just go behind closed doors. So their assistant general counsel will advise them what he believes should be done, but I can't, like, nobody can speak. The public's never allowed to address the Kansas Corporation Commission.
That's what the ladies from down there in the Flint Hills that we talked to, they had a session going on that was like that. And that's real strange. You can go, you can be in the audience, but you can't speak. That's just, you know, that's just, it's like, it's a controlled environment. And You know, and I think I come back again and go, well, what are we to do? I mean, you know, what are we as people to do? I'm not saying that you have to have that answer. But like when you talk in terms of researching it, those are the kind of things I'd like to see researched to find out what is it that we as individuals can actually do.
Well, we're just take a stand. Contact your legislators. Write these letters. You know, come. We're having a walk through Lawrence, and on the 28th, that's this Saturday. Come, be around people that, you know, are working on the same issue, and we just got to make our voices heard. But like, so even with the KCC, you can't even if you request. Like, they only set the meeting agendas by noon the day before, and even if you request to be able to be placed on a meeting agenda like 4 days in advance, you just cannot talk to them at all, period.
Well, that's something. And this is supposed to be the freedom of speech, right?
Their mission is to, where I've read this before because it's Chris, the mission of the Kansas Corporation Commission is to serve the people of Kansas,
yes,
by regulating the state's energy infrastructure, oil and gas production, and commercial trucking to ensure public safety. But they won't talk to us, so I don't understand how. Like, if they're serving us, I don't know.
They're serving big dollars, baby. That's what's going on. You know, I really appreciate you calling in and letting us talk to you about this. That would be because I wanted to speak up on a letter that we got in about the Tyson thing. That's another issue that's going on out there.
Yeah.
But we really do appreciate you doing that. And keep us informed on anything that you find out about, or you can talk to us about it so we can get it on our website too, okay?
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Sure. Thanks again, Jessica.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, talk to you guys later. Bye.
All righty. I wanted to get this letter. Mike passed it on to me. It came from, I guess he's a chief executive officer. He was sending it to the chief executive officer of Tyson, because there's a lot going on in the state of Kansas about Tyson. We had Tonganoxie act up and show out and make it get front page news and made it a front burner issue, but a lot still going on out there in the state and we're not hearing about it. I was at a meeting this weekend with some NAACP folks, and one of the presidents of a branch that's down in Salinas was talking about how out there in that area, I guess they're down, no, Junction City, in that area, there's some people up there talking to farmers already, where the farmers themselves are out there trying to figure out how they can make contact with them and see what they can get done. Someone was talking about some ads out saying, if you don't want Tonganoxie, why, what about us, you know? So, I mean, it's a conversation, just like we just had about the fracking. It's more than just people who live in Tonganoxie that needs to be speaking up and being conscientious about what's going on with these kind of corporations. Tyson has big, deep pockets. You all know that. And they're just as easy to move in. And it's getting to be an issue. And I was telling Mike about that today, just like it is in the inner city. You know, you got these corporations coming in and building plants, and Amazon's coming in, and Amazon's creating a problem with diesel emission. But at the same time, people need jobs. So you're putting your people, your American public, in a position where they have to make a decision whether they need to be conscientious about their health or conscientious about making money. And that's kind of what I see happening here, even with the Tyson issue. Because you have people out there that are having a rough time right now. Your rural community suffering the consequences of people moving out and moving to other areas. So we need to make sure you keep your ear to the grindstone and pay attention to what's going on out there and speak up when you can, even if it's not in your neck of the woods. We need to make sure that we're representing this so that the legislators don't think this is going by without us being able to say anything.
All right, and so I was telling Richard also that I was following the No Tyson in Tonganoxie Facebook group, and someone posted they were wearing their No Tyson in Tongi T-shirt in Hutchison, and someone came up to him and said, "Hey, thanks a lot. That means we might get it, and that might be good jobs for us."
Right.
So, which is, you know, kind of an interesting reaction. But hand me that letter for a sec.
Yeah.
So the letter, I'm not going to read it to you, but it's from I forget the name of the organization now, Mighty Earth, I think they are. And so it's an organization that's moved, that opened up a shop here in town, a national organization, at, right around the time Tyson showed up, looking to go to Tonganoxie. But so they just have different, they want to set standards for for their vendors, basically.
Right. But you know, I'll never get past Craig Ballen talking about the chicken feathers,
right?
You know, and how they pack them in so tight, even on the trucks, that they've fallen off into the neighborhoods and stuff, and they got bacteria in them. That's a major issue.
That's right.
Has anybody seen the documentary Super Size Me?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it 6 times, and I think some of those scenes in there where they show the chickens speaks volumes about the distress to the animal and just the whole environment and the utter greed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right. I think it's time for us to turn it over to Natural E for our calendar of events.
Thanks, Mike. Tuesday, October 24th, 7 p.m. at the Westport Coffee House Theater, an art historical journey along the Missouri River. It's a presentation by Brian Hearn, art historian and writer. In this presentation, Brian Hearn will share a curated selection of the river's most iconic images and consider how artists' representations have shifted, like the river itself, through the centuries. This is a part of the Big Muddy Speaker Series, and again, it's held at the Westport Coffee House Theater, which is at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue. The theater is in the basement of the coffee house and has theater seating. That's Tuesday, October 24th at 7 p.m. Climate change in polar regions. I believe this is tonight. Yep, this is tonight. It starts at 7:30 p.m. It goes until 9 p.m. You can learn about the latest results of climate change on polar ice sheets from a University of Kansas scientist studying sea ice, Dr. John Padden, associate scientist at the KU Center for Remote Sensing of Ice Sheets, will speak on climate change and crisis. Remote sensing work in polar regions, and the result of United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and Ice Sheets and Sea Ice in the World. It's a free presentation hosted by the Jayhawk Audubon Society tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church Fellowship Hall, which is located at 1245 New Hampshire in Lawrence, Kansas. It's a BYO dinner, and go check that out if you're in Lawrence, Kansas. And then the Missouri Green Schools and Environmental Education Conference, hosted by Missouri Environmental Education Association and the Kansas City Zoo, has an event on November 3rd and 4th. Educators will share their experiences developing a green school, aligning environmental education and STEAM, working on certification and programs for preschoolers. Go to our Facebook page for more information.
We're all exposed and we're all at risk. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Air, water, and soil pollution are killing more people in the world each year than all wars and violence. A new study published in The Lancet, a British medical journal, shows that about 9 million people died prematurely from exposure to toxic chemicals in 2015.
The study is the first effort ever to determine the number of deaths from all forms of pollution. The morbidity rate may be even higher because some places on Earth are not monitoring pollution and some potential toxins are being ignored.
The report notes that of the 5,000 new chemicals that have been dispersed over the planet since 1950, less than half have been tested for toxicity. In other words, there may be deaths caused by pollutants that we do not yet know about.
While all people are exposed, the authors note that the effects of pollutants are seen most in the young and the poor.
Some startling statistics: the number of people killed by pollution each year is 1.5 times greater than those killed by smoking, 3 times the number of those killed by tuberculosis, AIDS, and malaria combined, and 15 times more than the number of humans killed by wars and violence.
The largest category of deadly pollutants is air contamination from factories and vehicles, but hazards are also found in water supplies that lead to infectious diseases.
The report, which took 2 years and involved more than 40 international researchers, concludes that much of the world's pollution can be controlled and related diseases prevented, but it will take leadership, resources, and clear strategies.
So it's time timely that in December, the UN Environment Assembly will take place in Kenya, and its title this year, Towards a Pollution-Free Planet. Participants will, among other things, outline realistic steps to address pollution to protect human health.
If you like to eat nutritious fruits and vegetables, you should thank an insect. And if you like to eat fish, like salmon, you should thank a fly. Those were the sentiments expressed by Scott Black, executive director of an environmental group known as the Xersa Society, in the wake of a study showing a massive decrease in flying insects in nature reserves in western Germany.
Researchers who've been collecting the critters for 27 years have shown a remarkable decline of nearly 80%. They measure the overall weight of the bugs and not the number or diversity of different species.
The results of the study were published last week in the journal PLOS One, but they have not yet determined what caused the decline. The researchers found no evidence that it was caused by climate change, habitat loss, pesticides, or pollutants.
And so far, puzzled researchers haven't found a corresponding decline in insect-eating birds or plants that depend on the bugs for pollination. More research will be needed, but one scientist noted that, unfortunately, there are no studies showing that insects are doing well.
It may be the pipeline project you've never heard of, but for residents of Virginia and North Carolina, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline represents either an environmental catastrophe or a major economic opportunity.
On Friday the 13th, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approved a permit for the 600-mile pipeline that could cost $5 billion. It's slated to deliver natural gas by running from West Virginia through Virginia and into eastern North Carolina.
In Virginia, the pipeline will cross about 700 rivers and streams, and in North Carolina, about 320 waterways. A spokesperson for the Sierra Club told the North Carolina Independent Weekly that the pipe will release methane every step of the way.
In addition, Hope Taylor, executive director of Clean Water for North Carolina, told the Staunton News Leader that the pipeline would go through communities that are 60% African American and 95% Native American.
The pipeline still must be approved by state environmental agencies.
They're calling it a super typhoon, or the equivalent of a Category 4 to 5 hurricane, and it's predicted to hit Tokyo, Japan on Monday morning, October 23rd.
Recently, Typhoon Lan, as it's called, had sustained winds of up to 150 miles per hour and gusts near 180, and at one point its eye was 50 miles in diameter.
As it passes the greater Tokyo area with its nearly 38 million inhabitants, Lan is expected to weaken, but still be very destructive.
For those in the U.S., Typhoon Lan could affect the jet stream, and as Mashable reports, after a strong typhoon moves into the northern Pacific, weather systems over North America tend to become more amplified, spawning storms and outbreaks of cold air.
With that, finally this week, NOAA's Climate Prediction Center is out with its 2017-2018 winter forecast for temperature, precipitation, and drought. And for the second year in a row, La Niña is poised to be a major factor.
First, temperature. They're forecasting above-average temps for the southern two-thirds of the continental U.S. and the East Coast, as well as Hawaii and western Alaska. It could be chillier in Washington state and along the Canadian border.
And for precipitation, drier conditions are very likely along the entire southern U.S., and the odds are that the northern states like Montana and the Dakotas will be wetter than average. Although that sounds like good news for the northern plains, which have been in exceptional drought, forecasters say it won't offer much relief because the ground in winter is often frozen.
As for California, the huge snowfall last year might be a distant memory because models indicate it will be less wet and a bit warmer.
That said, while NOAA makes long-term predictions about temperature and precipitation, it doesn't make any claims about the frequency or severity of actual storms.
In a press release, they explained that even though the last two winters had above-average temperatures, many parts of the country saw significant snowstorms. It's difficult to predict snow events more than a week in advance because they depend upon the strength and track of winter storms.
The Climate Prediction Center will update its forecast in mid-November with news about La Niña and other weather-making patterns. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Water quality experts will present the latest science and research in the field at WQTC in Portland, November 12th through 16th. Learn more at awwa.org/WQTC.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.